شيء مستر مبياني.
Jefferson, good morning. Good morning, colleague. I'm present. Thank you very much.
Good morning. Chief Prince Prince Namashe.
Molo Salo, Namalungu, Ngozi.
Good morning.
Mr. Singh.
Good morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues.
Morning.
Chair, Mr. Mulder.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, all. I must just say that I'm still recovering from a medical procedure, but I can't miss out on a meeting like this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and a speedy recovery to you, Honourable Mulder.
Chair, Mr. McPherson.
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Chair, Ms. Mutahum.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Good morning.
Chair, Ms. Mwatse.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Good morning.
Chair, those are all members on the platform at the moment. I think one other member may still try to connect with us, Chair, and we have an my apologies. It's on my list. My apologies. I miss Mr. Malamatia.
No, morning, Chair. Morning, everybody. I'm present.
Good morning. Can we have the agenda for the meeting, please, Mr. Hermans? So there we have the agenda. Can I have apologies, please, Mr. Hermans?
Chair, we have an apology from Mr. Cuthbert, who is currently on study leave, Chair, and he will return next week, Chair. Those are the only apology that I have at the moment. Thanks.
Yeah. And then can we have a move and a second for the adoption of the agenda, please? And the agenda consists, of course, of the briefing by the Office of the Auditor General on the audit outcomes of DTIC and its entities, and then the briefing by the Minister on the 2021-2022 audit report. Honourable Mwatse.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I move for adoption of the agenda as presented.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mwatse. Can I have a second for the adoption of the agenda, please? Honourable Mutahum.
Thanks, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much. So the purpose of the briefing of the Office of the Auditor General is for the Office to reflect on the audit outcomes of the DTIC and the six entities it had assessed for the 2021-2022 financial year. This will provide this portfolio committee with information regarding the accuracy and reliability of reported financial and non-financial performance in the respective annual reports. It will also highlight any key areas affecting governance at the DTIC and these entities. This information should assist the committee in its oversight role when assessing the performance of the entities, taking into consideration the committee's objective to produce a budgetary review and recommendations report. So I see the minister is on the platform, but I think we are led by Mr. Shabangu. from the Office of the Auditor General. Mr. Shabangu, you may introduce your team and then proceed with the report. Thank you. Can we check with Mr. Shabangu on the platform?
Morning, apologies for that. Yes, I'm on the platform. Morning, Chair, and morning,
morning
to Minister and Honourable members and colleagues from the DTIC portfolio. I'm not alone today. I'm with my colleagues, Mr. Bosa, who will be doing the presentation, is the acting manager in the DTIC portfolio, as well as Ntokozo CBC, who's also another acting manager in our portfolio. And we also have Mr. Thulani Moyo, who's a manager for the NLC group, as well as Manari, who's doing the DTIC audit. Chair, Honorable Chair, this meeting follows a series of meetings that we had with the DG of the DTIC portfolio. Thereafter, we met with the minister, and then we met with yourself last week in preparation of this session to take you through the audit outcomes of the portfolio. But without wasting any time, I'll hand over to Tulo to take us through the presentation. And Chair, will be guided by yourself as to how much detail you want us to go through, considering that the presentation was shared in advance. We'll be guided by yourself, Honorable Chair. Thanks.
Thank you. I think we'll be guided by the time provided. So you can go through your presentations and then we'll take questions and discussion from members. So you may proceed.
Thank you. Tulo, you can proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Tsepo, for that introduction. I requested Itali to present the slide on my behalf while I present. I don't know if he has access to be able to share the slides. Itali, if you can do that with me.
Let me try. I don't know whether I have, thank you. I don't know whether I have access. Let me try and then.
I will give you access now. I didn't know you were the one to share. I'll give you access now.
Thank you.
Maybe while we're waiting and he's trying to present, because the first slide is a very normal and general slide that we always start with, which is our mission statement. So there, I think it's important to note that it's part of our process with Body 2. We always try to ensure that we enable oversight, accountability, and governance. So I think for the purpose of this session, this is an important part of trying us to assist in terms of enabling accountability and oversight to various stakeholders, especially this important committee, so that we ensure that it assists in, like, we assist the committee and give insight for them for you to perform your oversight responsibilities. Okay, we can move to the next slide, Jani. Thank you. So in line with our new the strategy of the new auditor general, we have acknowledged that as the auditor general office alone, we cannot really try and change the accountability system. So we call upon all stakeholders and stakeholders and to say all have a role to play in the national government accountability system. We would have shared more details on this in the briefing notes that we have sent before this meeting. So this is just to highlight that if all the stakeholders, if all the relevant role players can play their part, as we will demonstrate when we are presenting this slide, there is a almost guaranteed impact on the lives realities of the citizens. Thank you. We can move to the next slide. Okay, maybe this one is more of because we do know that this portfolio doesn't consist only the audits that we audit the auditors in North South Africa, but this was more like to say upfront that although the portfolio has many entities, the purpose of the presentation, Honorable Chair has already said at the beginning of the meeting that we are going to be focused solely on DTIC, department and district entities that were audited by the Auditor General, which is in line with our general report that we will present here, that is presented by our AG. Also, on top of that, we do elevate some key messages of concern that we've identified in some entities that are not necessarily audited by us, but were because of the guidance or momentum we try to give to these auditors that are auditing these entities. So we'll have some slides on NEF and on IPC on some of the messages that we would like to put or elevate for the portfolio committee. Thank you. We can move to the next slide. Okay, this is more of an introduction slide to audit outcomes where we want to then show the different audit outcomes and what do they mean before we actually get into the details of the outcome. Obviously, we want to everyone to be on the clean part, on the unqualified opinion with no findings, which means the clean audit that it is commercially known. So we want everyone to be there, all the entities and the departments to be there. This is where everyone has produced credible and reliable financial statements, and as part of our audit, we did not identify misstatements in compliance with key legislation. And also, the performance information was also useful and reliable for the users. And then on the next one is when we start focusing on that orange box. The financial statements are still unqualified. That means they are still credible and reliable. It could be after the assistant, after the audit, and then some significant or material corrections were made, and then as a result of that, then the financial statements that are then published are free from errors and are credible and reliable. But we still have some issues with compliance, where some would identify issues of non-compliance with key legislation, or the performance information is not useful and reliable. And then the next one is qualified opinion as well, where now the financial statements are not credible or not reliable. And then the last two, which are adverse and disclaimer, this is where we are saying an adverse and the disclaimer, the financial statements are substantial, almost all the amount and disclosure amount in the financial statement are either and are not reliable because on adverse, we disagree with the amount that management presented and the supporting documentation that is provided at for audit. And a non-disclaimer opinion is where management did not give a supporting documentation for almost all the amounts and disclosure notes that are in the financial statement. So with this, honorable members, I'll then proceed to then go in details on the outcomes of the portfolio for the 2021-2022 year. Thank you, Danny. So the next two slides, slide 6 and 7, will be like talking to the audit outcomes and the one a small movement that happened within these seven audits. So between from 2021 to 2022, there has been we had three unqualified with no findings, which means three clean audits in the portfolio. And then on the unqualified findings, so where the financial statement was still unqualified, but the other performance information and compliance criticism had issues with two last year, it has increased to three, and that is caused by a movement that came from qualified in the previous financial year, where we were two qualified audits, but now we only have one qualified, which is the National Network Commission. The one that process is a national regulator for compulsory specification, which is NRCS. So NRCS has improved after 7 or 8 years of getting qualified opinions. They've improved in the current financial year to be unqualified findings. I just want to, maybe while we're still there, just want to warn the committee there on that one, because one of the key measures of the improvement of this entity was the CFO who was driving the performance and driving the credible and reliable financial reporting, who has since subsequently left the organization. Not to say that because the CFO has left the entity, but we're hoping that the and the processes and the controls that the CFO has established will continue to be maintained, so that you allow that the entity can maintain its unqualified opinion on the financial statements. Thank you. Okay, this slide is also showing the improvement, which is NLCS that I just spoke about. You can move to the next slide. Okay, the next one. On the portfolio performance, I think this is where, in line with our new strategy and cash shift, this is also where we want to drive an awareness and the message that we have key messages that we want to elevate, and we are showing awareness on how to say the performance information reported and the service delivery. There is a direct link that we are able to see by everyone and citizen and by the members of the committee and all the other role players in the country system. I'll spend more time on this part of the presentation on the portfolio performance, but before we get to the key message that we want to elevate, I'll first start with the performance planning and reporting that happens, which is a normal annual performance report that is being reported by the department and its entities. So in this cycle reporting, the quality of performance reporting, which was submitted for us for auditing, so the annual performance report for the six of the auditees that we audited was good. And then for one, which is SAPS, the entity there, the quality of performance reporting was not so quite good. As a result, there were material misstatements or material findings that we communicated in the audit report of the SAPS. So this is just to give a background on what happened with SAPS. The issue was with the planning documents. The planning documents are supposed to have indicators and targets that are smart, that follow the smart principle. So as part of the review of the planning and verifying the planning documents, some of indicators and their targets were not measurable. As a result, the performance information was not useful. This then translated to for us, when we're auditing the annual performance report, not be able to verify the reliability of this performance information because it was not measurable. So we cannot verify if this reported performance information was accurate. So as a result, then we're limited in terms of confirming those indicators reliability. As a result, the performance information was not totally useful and totally reliable for SAPS, which resulted into findings that were reported in our audit report. You can move on, Itani. Thank you. And then the next three slides, which is like 10, 11, and 12, or do more again, still on the performance information, then we're trying to then try now to be more intentional in terms of linking this performance information to the impact that it has on the country and on service delivery. We did perform some work or some analysis from our office where we look at the indicators that are in the MTSF and to look at which are linked to the portfolio and look at these indicators to see which indicators can we consider them as key indicators or key targets in the framework, and then we'll have to do more work with them and try to see if us achieving these indicators is assisting in terms of service delivery. Obviously, there is no methodology in that, and it's not part of the audit work that we do to report in the audit report that was reported on 31 July, but it was more work where we're now trying to go deeper and see how the performance information enhances service delivery. And then obviously, for part of today's session, we want to drive that awareness also to the portfolio committee. And as Trevor indicated earlier, we had some sessions with the DGs, with the minister, and to ensure that we drive this conversation and make sure all the relevant role players come to party and they are able to together try and get a solution in terms of linking this performance information results to service delivery. So we identify those indicators, and on top of identifying those indicators, as we can see from the graphs below, and we can see that the performance of the portfolio has is quite good, except for SA ABS, which is below 60%, which is linking also to the fact that we identified some issues with SABS, where, and because of the information that is not reliable, it's also not easy to monitor the performance and then ensure that they are improving their performance and actually against their indicators and targets. I'd like also maybe from this side to apologize to Tepesin, because we met with Tepesin in the past week. The slide might have slightly different to what I presented to Tepesin last week Friday, especially in our phase where I indicated 80% achievement against the target, but it's 60% against the overall targets for analysis. Apologies to the number of exceptions for that, but we corrected after the reviews that happened prior to this setting and also prior to sending the final presentation to the committee last week. We can move to the next one, Itani. Okay, thank you. Honorable members, this is, I think, our new key message that is different from what we've been presenting the prior years in terms of the our audit outcomes, where we just tell you the audit outcomes and the causes of issues and the recommendations. This year, this is the part where we message we are trying to elevate and trying to have all the role players to reflect on the performance and then link it to the service delivery. We use this key indicator that I spoken about earlier on, that we're saying are key indicators, and then we see how the department performed against them. As you can see in the slides here, DTIC, Competition Commission, and the NLC group, they all achieved in this key indicator that we identified for them, which then begs the question, if we're saying they did achieve, and that means whatever we plan them to achieve, as when we're setting these targets and the indicators and we're designing them, well, obviously the goal in mind is to see an impact, to see the change in the economy, which is part of the mandate of the portfolio, in the job creation, which is also mandate of the portfolio. And how can we then say, if you look at this and the priority of the portfolio in terms of the MTSF, looking at these indicators being achieved and some are being overachieved, is there can we confirm that through the lived experience or the realities of our citizens in the country, the economy, the level of jobs, the level of unemployment, can we then say us achieving in these targets and these indicators, is it then also an achievement in terms of what the mandate of the department? So this is what the question or the awareness we're trying to raise and the reflection that we need to say we want to try to raise to all the role players and of course to the command as part of the oversight to ensure that when we approve the next planning document, these are the questions we are thinking about, these are the things we are looking and saying, how can we then improve these performance information? We then, if we go to the next slide, Danny, we then also as part of our process of doing this organization, try to look at the planning document of the prior year that we audited and look at the program that we audited. And obviously, again, like I did mention earlier, this is not necessarily a part of audit work that we did and we reported on, but this is more of a work that we did, of a reflection post audit and say, how can we look at this and improve this? Yes, the planning document, yes, the reported performance information was reliable and it meets all the tips in terms of the framework for reporting. But now let's look at then how can we then link this to service delivery? How does this impact our people? And do we take an example of this one indicator? If I could just briefly speak to this indicator, this indicator and this target are talking to a report on infrastructure supported in targeted areas. And then obviously to achieve that, on that indicator, there is a report that must be produced by the department. And then we look at it and say, if you do this report and you achieve on this report, I will then say we are going to be able to achieve the output and outcome of this indicator, which is the output being the infrastructure development to unlock activities in support of the district context. Can we say by producing this report, we can achieve that output? Also the outcome, the increased accessibility in the soil finance measure to support investment in priority sectors in line with approved master plan. So I was saying, will this report, us achieving this report, will also mean that we've achieved the outcome and output that we have in this stage and that we're trying to achieve by setting these indicators and targets. So this is a part we say, let's reflect and see how can we then be more intentional in terms of what we want to achieve in terms of service delivery and how can we use those measures, which are the indicators and targets, to ensure that we link them and ensure that with us setting these, designing these indicators and targets, we are really achieving also on the account and output and of course ultimately on the MPSS by 2030. Then when we look back, we're saying we have achieved what we have planned to achieve in terms of the MPSS. Thank you. We can move to the next slide. So after then we've done that assessment and look at those and hopefully we'll reflect more and probably have a time to discuss more with the committee and we then moved to some other messages where we wanted to bring to the attention of the committees on other work that has been the messages that we have from performing our audit work. The honorable members will remember of the post unrest economic recovery support that was provided by the portfolio, the TIC portfolio. So we did look at some of the work, and I know as auditors we always regarded as to always come with only report on bad news or bad things, but I think on a lighter note here, we wanted to just say from the work done on the TIC portfolio, on the response to this post under the economic that happened in KZN and Gauteng last year. The entities in the portfolio, which is the PIC, NEF, and ITC, had some work to do. And there was an improvement that we've seen, especially in the rate of dispensing of funds. One, especially with ITC, when these initiatives started with COVID-19, we had noted in our special report then that the ITC was taking time to disperse funds. We have noted now that there is progress that is happening and now the funds are being dispersed much more faster, which is going to be able to assist in time with the needs of our citizens. And also our audit observation, which is a key thing to say, not that the funds are just dispersed for the purpose of being dispersed, but our observation, we did not identify a significant control deficiencies in this disbursement of funds, so the funds are almost likely being dispersed to the right people and for the right purposes. Thank you. Okay, so now I'm going to be on the next two or three slides. I'll be looking at some of the messages for certain entities that we believe the committee would also interest to the committee to know those messages, which might have come from our audit work and also things that are important for the committee to know to able to assist them in their oversight. And I think it's only natural that part of our outcomes and NLC being the only one with qualifications, audit qualification as in the financial assessment, being the first one to appear in these messages that we're trying to elevate for these entities. For NLC, there are two key messages that we want to elevate to the committee. The first one is on crime funding, and the other one is on legalities that we identified or that were disclosed in the financial assessment of the entity. So on the grant funding, there has been allegations against NLC management in terms of the money being used through various NPOs and NPCs and based on collusive relationships. We also have identified some key or weaknesses in this process of grant funding, and these weaknesses almost confirm the allegations against the management or against the entity NFC to say if these weaknesses are not resolved on time, whatever is happening, then there are chances of that money might not be used for internal purposes. As part of to try and paint this picture, we use two examples, but the example, I'm not going to much into detail in the example, I'm just going to show the key issue page example. For the first one on Ubuntu NTC, the issue there was on variation orders. There's been a significant variation orders on project token funding where the variation orders are. I think that they can almost the initial approved amount of the project. So this is a key concern that we are raising to the portfolio committee to say one of our members is well, part of your website, please look at this and ensure, to ensure that it's being kept and the projects are done using the amounts that we approved initially as much as possible. And then I think our key message, our key issue again that we want to raise was the issue of progress report. Is that not being used adequately or not being used at all? One instance is where the project's report will indicate that the performance from the previous transfer payment that was paid is not satisfactory, but still there will be payment that will still be made for the second transfer payment will be made before the actual issues of the second of the first report were resolved. So this means that amounts are being spent or transfers are being dispersed and ensuring that there is value that is being derived on the ground in these projects. We have attached at the end of this presentation more weaknesses that we identify in the annexes for the benefit of the community to look at and rate and ensure that trust them with the insight on this regard. On the next slide, I will then look at legal fees or legal expenses. Yeah, as part of audit, we will do some analysis and interpretation of the financial statements. So we did identify a very worrying trend in the legal fees, which have increased by almost 91% from the previous year. This is very concerning in terms of the nature and operations of the entity. And also, it is we want to note that these legal expenses are not as a result of the entity defending itself against litigation, but they are initiated by management of the NLC. And also, this is on top of the 9 million rand of the salaries and wages of the legal unit of the entity. So we're saying this 37 million increase in legal fees is worrisome and needs to be looked at and ensure that if there is a way to cut it, and then it can be kept. Also, maybe as part of, to note that is part of our qualification area, the qualification area on the regular expenditure, the legal fees, appointment of these legal attorneys also included in the irregular expenditure, which was not disclosed, which resulted in the audit report being qualified as we had indicated that the irregular expenditure was not complete in the financial statement. Thank you. Okay, move. After looking at NLC, then we look at another entity that we think the committee need to have a deeper or closer look at it, which is South African Bureau of Standards. There the issues are governance issues, which are mainly caused by a lack of a fully constituted and functional board of directors, and also without a permanent chief executive officer since 2018. So in the past, since 2018, there has not been a fully functional board, and there's not been a permanent CEO. And as a result, this has caused some governance issues and some of the highlight or key issues that you've identified is the decline in revenue, and there's been loss of critical skills, which also will probably contribute to the decline in revenue and losses by the group. So we also have some engagement with the minister where we call upon the minister to make sure that the accounting authority is established in the entity. The minister did make a commitment, but obviously the minister did also indicate that it's not about just appointing the board and making sure that they're supporting the right people, the appropriate skills to ensure that when the board is fully established, it can then assist in terms of moving the entity to forward. And of course, you will have seen in the previous slide when we spoke about performance information, SABS is the one entity that is underperforming in the portfolio. So we need to ensure that these issues are solved expeditiously, and then we can then move forward in terms of addressing the performance issues of the entity. Thank you. We can move to the next slide. Another entity which I wanted to give a message on is the Industrial Development Corporation, IDC, which is not audited by us as part of our normal audit, but it's a Schedule 2 entity, and so it's an entity that we always have, although we're not necessarily auditing, but we always have maintained a closer relationship with the auditors, and also because of the initiatives that they do, also try and make sure that we follow up and ensure that those initiatives participate with those initiatives. One initiative that while they were supposed to implement in this year or on the past year of audit 2021-2022 was the Presidential Employment Stimulus, and they were responsible for Social Employment Fund Initiative through DTIC. So there was a budget allocation of 800 million for IDC, and the plan was to create 50,000 jobs. As at year ended 1 March 2022, zero was spent, and automatically there were no jobs yet created from. So this initiative has not yet happened. We have had some engagements with the minister, with the DGs on this and the department, and there were some context behind it and of why this fund was not spent, and it is because this fund was allocated as part of the adjustment to the 2021. As a result, the funds were received late and were transferred late to the IPC. As a result, by 31 March 2022, not much was done. From the engagement that we've had with the minister and the PT, there has been a confirmation, or there has been indication that work has started and a lot of work has done, but from our side, we will follow up on that work on the next audit cycle. Thank you. And the last entity to look at as part of our message that we're trying to elevate is the National Empowerment Fund, another ODT that we don't audit as Auditor General. But one issue that we wanted to elevate here is the issue that NEF is a group, has two subsidiaries. So NEF, as you can see in the audit account that I have put there, they were financially unqualified with no findings on predetermined objectives and compliance with key legislation as a separate entity. But because they have two entities that support under them, so at group level, unfortunately, the clean audit could not be maintained. It was because of the irregular expenditure that was incurred by these two entities. The reason for this irregular expenditure was because these two entities would normally apply for exemption, which is granted by the Minister of Finance, to be exempted from complying with KFMA. But in this current, in the previous financial year, these exemptions were not granted in time, due to the applications that were not done in time, and as a result, by year end, all those the exemptions were not granted, and all the expenditure that was incurred, not in accordance with KFMA, then became irregular expenditure. So we call on the relevant role players to ensure that these applications are done on time, and also consider having this application maybe in 3 years, not necessarily having to request for them every financial year, so allow for proper planning, because if this was probably done for 3 years, then there would not have been a need for the approval by the minister, and then this regular expenditure could have been easily been avoided. Thank you. Then I look at the material regularities. Here, I think the key thing is just say for at this stage for the DTIC portfolio, we not have yet identified the material regularities in line with our new or with our amended Public Audit Act, where we are given more power to implement the material regularity process. We are currently in the office implementing it on a piecemeal basis, adding entities and entities that have global and eventually all entities and departments will be under this process. But at this stage, we have added quite a few. And at this stage, nothing has been identified and reported in terms of the material irregularities for the TTIC portfolio. But the audit work continues, and then things may change in no time. But at this stage, we haven't identified anything. Thank you. Now we're going to look at the financial reporting, quality of financial reporting, and also compliance with key legislation. When you look at the quality of financial reporting, we're looking at the financial statement to see if the financial statement that were submitted for audit were credible and reliable, and then subsequently after audit, the financial statement that were also tabled to the portfolio committee are also credible and reliable. So if you look at those graphs there, before audit is what financial, the financial statement that we have received to audit, and the green at the top, DTICC, APCC, those were unmodified, just saying that the financial statement that we received did not have a material misstatement. So when the financial that we received for audit were credible and reliable. But for the other four entities, which is NCR, SABS, NCRS, and NLC, the financial statement that we received contains vulnerabilities that required management to correct them before the financial statement were issued. And then after the audit process happened and the correction has happened, three entities, which is NCR, SABS, and NCRS, moved to the different side, and only one of them, NLC, because they could not process these corrections or the correct corrections on time for reporting. So NLCS remained as the only entity in the portfolio or in these seven entities to have a qualified opinion in the financial statement. The qualification is on irregular expenditure that has been disclosed, which is coming from deviations from procurement contracts that were awarded based on criteria that differ from the original specification, and specification for what that did not stipulate the minimum threshold for local production and content. So this is very important to have, especially without driving these new messages of saying we must implement indicators and targets that impact service delivery. We need quality financial reporting as a basis to start this change. So it's important that NLC also, we assist NLC to move from where they are to the green side to ensure that they're having a good quality financial assessment, because poor quality financial assessment will impact the ability of all the relevant stakeholders making a right decision and ensuring that these decisions are in the decision that are able to impact the citizens. For example, with the NLC, the regular expenditure is not complete, then the next step for regular expenditure for management is then investigate that regular expenditure and institute consequence management. And in this case, it is not complete. That means the investigation is only complete because there is some regular expenditure that is complicated, which then automatically means the consequence management that is going to be done and not going to be complete. So it's important that you ensure that the reporting is credible, is reliable, to then allow the other steps and next steps to take place from using reliable information. Okay, we can move to the next slide, Tani. Okay, this slide is more on financial aid of the department and the entities. I don't think for this one I'll very much because as things said, the department and the entities overall, the whole of the portfolio is looking quite good in terms of financial health, and also there are no going concern issues that we are concerned about. So at this stage, the financial health of the portfolio is good, as indicated by these ratios and indicators that we would have performed as part of our audit work. Okay, more be done. Okay. Now looking at compliance with key legislation, on this slide, as you can see, I think there are two key things that I want to highlight. One of the key non-compliance is the quality of financial statements. So the financial statements that have been prepared and submitted for audit are not of quality, are not prepared in terms of the appropriate accounting framework as required by the TFMH, which resulted in just four audits. Entities having non-compliance issues. And then another key issue is to say, you should look at those affected entities for each of these areas of non-compliance. NLC extends to appear with the most. It appears under quality of financial statements, appear again under procurement and contract administration. That means when they are procuring, they are not always complying with PFMA. And again, they are not having steps to prevent irregular expenditure, and then of course because of that they also are not effective consequence management one time. So NLC is one entity that is seems to appear in all these non-compliant areas, and the other that they must be closer to ensure NLC is assisted to move from this non-compliant key legislation. Okay. Okay, another thing that comes from non-compliance is the regular expenditure. The result of the non-compliance that happen, especially procurement and contract management, then there's an irregular expenditure that comes out of that, and then it is to show. You will see that from 2021 to 2022, there's a big increase of irregular expenditure from 23 million to 78 million. The biggest increase is caused by NLC. Which with 68 million regular expenditures that came from NLC. Again, it also speaks to the effect that the regular, like, there was non-compliance on procurement and corrupt management on the previous side, and also non-compliance on prevention of the regular expenditure. And so NLC has been a major contributor of irregular expenditure. And also, I think it's also important to note that the amount that we put here, the amount that we have disclosed in the financial statement, this is still the amount that you say the expenditure is incomplete and not included in the financial statement. And then, on still on compliance and all from members, the one part leg that we also look at is after this irregular expenditure has been disclosed. So now this slide is looking at the balance. The first one is looking at the amount that is incurred annually, the irregular expenditure, but the balance becomes cumulative. Obviously, some balance become, it can be reduced or it can increase based on what has happened and how it was dealt with. So if we look at the prior year, which is 2021, the regular expenditure of 174 million, how it was dealt with in the current year. So if you look there on that slide, only 13 million has been successfully condoned at this stage, which means 151 million is not dealt with, is not condoned, is not being recovered in process of recovery, or not putting off. The picture looks bad, but I think for more context, the bigger chunk of this 161 million is 99 million that is coming from CIPC, and this regular expenditure, there was investigation that happened, and it commenced from long time ago, I think around 2010, where there was investigation that happened, but after this regular expenditure was identified, the entity stopped the contract, and then the supplier, the contractor, took the entity to court, and there's been a pending case which did not allow this regular expenditure to then continue and be condoned. So, from the recent development, particularly after year end, the subsequent development indicates that it seems like the state attorney has communicated that the court case is not going to continue, and then the entity must start the process of reducing or condoning this regular expenditure. So we're hoping that by the next financial year, this regular expenditure will have been dealt with, and a significant part of it will be dealt with, and then there will be low balances, present balances of the regular expenditure. Okay. Yes, now to go to the conclusions, recommendation, we had some based from this whole presentation and all the other outcomes. There were some broad causes or key causes that were identified, and then some recommendations to the accounting officer and accounting authorities, and also to the executive authority. And as indicated earlier, we had some meetings with the minister, and there were some few commitments that we did get from the minister. Looking at the root causes at NLCs, we tried to be more specific to entities that there were significant issues. no response by management on priority findings, which resulted in significant findings in the portfolio. And of course, then also caused the lack of consequent management because of this low response. And SNPS, I think we have already said that there are issues, governance issues, which are mainly due to the board not fully consistent, which also caused the instability of our vacancies in key position as a result of loss of critical skills. And then we have some recommendations. Some recommendations include adequate controls that must be put in place to prevent irregular expenditure. And then furthermore, there must be controls to identify and report on this and record this irregular expenditure so that it allows for all the role players to know what the irregular the impact and of this irregular expenditure. And this will also allow more consequence management investigation to take place. We also need the need for proper control to prepare and review financial statements. Irregular expenditure must be investigated and disciplinary steps or actions should be taken. We noted that NLC has been a recognition of the commissioner, CFO and COO. So these vacancies, which are key vacancies, need to be filled timely to ensure that there are no controls in the there are no weaknesses in the control environment, and of course a more obvious recommendation for us in terms of governance issues for SAPS is to say an appointment of a fully functional board to lead and govern the entity is needed. Again, for NOCS, although they have improved, the CF vacancy that has since happened must be appropriately addressed timely to avoid the risk of regression in the audit account. Like I said, we did have a meeting with the minister and we had some commitments from the minister. The foreign minister did promise more engagement with the office of the AG in terms of ensuring that we look at these indicators and how can we improve them to ensure this, the quality of the indicators and targets is close to the service delivery and improve the lives of our people. The process of appointing a board, a fully functional board at SAPS will be finalized when the right candidates with right competencies are being identified. And then the minister also indicated that they will be introducing lifestyle audit to assist in improving integrity of the entities and of the board, and then irregularities will be investigated and consequence management will be implemented. And with that, this takes me to the final slide of my presentation, which is the message to the you honorable members, the portfolio committee. Now there's the next slide, Ethan. Thank you. There's one final slide.
But it was on that final slide and then it went out. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Before we actually go to the key message for the current year, we had some recommendation that we did also in the previous year. We just want to reflect on that and the message for the current year. And keeping on the message from the prior was like progress was to have monitor and regular follow-up with the executive authorization accounting officer on the progress on the audit action plan, and then also follow-up with the entities that indicate regular progress and risk expansion to consequence management. And then our reflection on this is the audit and action plans have been partially addressed, especially if you look at the issue of NOSI. They improved their audit accounts in terms of moving from the qualified from qualified. So there's progress there implementing the action plans, the audit action plans, but there's been a slow progress or slow response from the NLC side in terms of responding to these action plans and also in terms of preventing the incurrence of incurring irregular expenditures. So that's a reflection we have, and hopefully things will change, will improve also from the NLC and the whole portfolio. And then as a result, from the in this current Yeah, this is our overall message to you honorable members at the Portfolio Committee of Trade Industry and Competition. There are still entities in the portfolio that submit AFS contributing in accordance with the prescribed and standard reporting format, which speaks to the quality of financial reporting at the entities. And then we are saying there's still a need for an in-depth review on plan indicators and targets required to increase the impact in the service delivery and to ensure we improve the lives of our people. And then number three, for analysis, the weakness in the grant funding that we discussed above, and of course the annexures that I included at the end of the presentation must be quickly addressed. There's a need to quickly address that those weaknesses in grant funding. And then in SAPS, again, there's a need to ensure government startup established to improve sustainability of the entities. With that, I've come to the end of our presentation. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members.
Thank you very much to the AG's office, and led by Mr. Porsa, the presentation led by Mr. Porsa. Excuse me. Members, I just want to check with you whether we will have a question session now to the office of the AG, or whether we will take questions and discussions after the minister's presentation on the annual report. If I can just have an indication from members. I don't see any hands. Honorable Malamecha.
Thank you, Chair. I think let's rather have the question in Narisi after both a vertical presentation.
Okay. Honorable Burns Namashi.
No, thank you, Chair. I would have said the same, because, you know, once we deal with it in a piecemeal, it might create a more this integrated kind of engagement. So let's rather have the full set then start to raise questions. Thank you very much.
Can I then just check with the office of the AG, Mr. Porsa, Mr. Shabangu, whether you will be able to remain on the platform for the duration of the meeting?
Yes, Honorable Chair. We are at the minister today.
I can hear you.
I'm saying we will remain.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much. Then we hand over then to the minister to introduce his team and to take us to the next agenda item, which is the annual report of the department.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to the honourable members. Good morning to the team from the Auditor General's office. Good morning also to the officials who are present, and members of the public who may be following the proceedings. Chairperson, it's my my pleasure really to introduce the team. We have a team of made up of Deputy Minister Majola, who is here with us, together with a number of officials led by the Acting Director General, Shabir Khan. We also have present, among others, a number of Deputy Director Generals, Malebo Mabichi Thompson on industrial financing, Lerato Mataboge on exports. We have Irene Ramafola, the Acting CFO, Nontombi Matumela, the COO, and she's supported by Wongi Mashambise. Ambassador Xavier Karim is on the platform, Stephen Hanevo, Evelyn Masocha, Nimrod Zalk, Yunus Hussein, Mohammed Vauda, and Maute Malifani. There are also some support officials that may be present on the platform. Jefferson, may I first thank you for the opportunity for us to present the annual report. We have submitted the annual report to Parliament, and we've, in order to organize the presentation of the report, we thought it would be helpful just to have a PowerPoint, and I'm going to ask Tsulu just to flight that PowerPoint with your permission. Thank you, Tsulu. What the PowerPoint will seek to do, the presentation, is in three parts. The first part will look at the DTIC portfolio as a whole and the few highlights from that portfolio, going a little bit wider than the annual performance plan of the department. And I will highlight some of those key areas. Part two of the report will look at the annual performance summary for each of the programs in the department. More of the detail of that will be set out in the tabled report, but I'm asking Shabir Khan, as the Acting Director General, to take the committee through the programs. And then part three will be the financial performance and the audit outcomes, which will be presented by the DTIC team. The next slide is really just a contextual slide. It recalls, Chairperson, that in 2019-20, we commenced the sixth administration. And at the start of the administration, six priorities were identified and implemented. And work commenced that first year on it. And those six priorities, honorable members will recall, was building dynamic industries through partnerships, expanding exports through, among others, the African Continental Free Trade Area and other trade arrangements, improving the climate for investment and the level of fixed investment in the economy, promoting spatial equity through targeted policies, work on transformation of the economy and building a capable state. So that was the overall vision that we had. In 2020, the priorities were implemented, taking into account COVID-19, the pandemic and the shocks to firms, to consumers, to workers and citizens. And among many things, we used competition and trade regulations. We worked with companies to recover. More focus was given to localization, given the enormous disruptions in supply chains. And it included medical supplies, the work on ventilators, on face masks, sanitizers, and in the course of that year, laying the basis for vaccine production. And there was support rendered to firms affected by lockdowns, and as I've indicated, to the enormous challenges globally with goods moving between countries. In 2021-2022, which is the period covered by this report, we did work on all six priorities. They were resumed, but with a focus now on greater integration within the DTIC group. So that's the 10 programs of the department and the work between the departments and the entities. We work more actively with other parts of the state, more focus on partnerships with firms. We work on a quicker response to deal risk, and we draw on our COVID-19 experience there. We speeded up work on master plans, on exports, on localization, and on transformation. And the there was greater focus on a number of modalities and areas of work around the African Continental Free Trade Area and the World Trade Organization talks. And part of this year was also trying to get a greater level of off-balance sheet funding. Now, this first part of the presentation, Chairperson and honorable members, will really focus on some of the highlights. So they don't go into all the detail, but they lift out some of the key areas. The work of the department and the application of the budget to that work is on what the department will do. In other words, the steps it will take, the actions it will take, call it the inputs. What this report is beginning to do more is focus on the impact and on the outcomes. And in the new annual performance plan and the reporting that we've put in place inside the department, honorable members will see a greater focus not on have we administratively complied, that of course we also will report on, but more importantly, what is the impact in society? What is the outcome of the work of the DTIC? So that will be in this new financial year we're in, but we will highlight a few of the impact and outcome measures in the highlights. The next slide then begins the work. What it recalls, the work of the report that the Auditor General gave covered those audits that the AG's office had directly undertaken. And generally, the AG's office tend to focus on the audits where the risks are significant and where it needs to ensure that the team of the Auditor General goes through those things carefully. But there are 18 audits in total that is done for the department, some by the Auditor General, others by large accounting firms that are appointed with the AG's office. If we look at the audit outcomes as a whole, 17 of the entities, that's the department itself and entities, had unqualified audits. One entity received a qualified audit outcome, and that's the NLC. The next slide highlights the work that has been done across different parts of the DTIC to secure investment pledges, new investment commitments, and for the 2021 investment conference, 366 billion rand of fresh pledges were received. The DTIC hosted the investment conference on behalf of the presidency, and we worked with other departments to secure these pledges. 79 projects were announced, and if we take into account what we call expansions is where a previous pledge, the company had increased the level of capital spending. For example, if I use the example of one of the car companies, they made a commitment. As they undertook this commitment, they realized that they could do a little bit more, so they increased that. Sometimes a pledge is reduced when a project is put on hold or cancelled. If we take all of that into account, the 79 projects plus the expansions minus the reductions, the total was 366 billion rand. Of that, we started to focus now on getting more commitments from black industrialists, and 36.7 billion rand of the total commitments made came from black industrialists who are seeking to expand their businesses, grow their firms, increase their output. There was also significant implementation of commitments made at previous investment conferences. Some of those are covered in the annual report, and some of those we covered extensively itself at the conference. If we add up the commitments now made over the last four-year period, they amount to 1.1 trillion rand. The five-year target is 1.2 trillion rand, and we have one more conference before this five-year cycle is over, and then the president would set a new target for the period ahead. The next slide then covers approvals of investment by the IDC specifically. The IDC provides support in loans and equity for investments, and its total approvals for the financial year were 16 billion rand. It disbursed about 7.2 billion rand. 5.3 billion rand was approved for black empowered companies, 4.1 billion rand for black industrialists, and 1.4 billion rand was approved for women and youth empowered businesses. Now the IDC approvals are based on putting forward a proposition. A company would put up a business plan and say, we think we can make this business plan work, and it fits into the mandate of the IBC. It goes through a process, and if it meets the requirements and the IDC has the resources available, that is approved. The disbursements then flow as each of these projects reach a particular milestone. On the right-hand side, we talk about rebuilding the asset base of the IDC. The IDC has not received fresh shareholder monies for probably the last 40 or more years. It's received no new monies in the period of the democracy and for many, many, many years, even prior to that. So the IDC has to work with its balance sheet. It's got to make sure that it's able to invest in businesses that are profitable, that pay dividends. It has to use the asset base to go into the money market and borrow money so that it can finance the commitments that it makes to new investors. And therefore, the IDC's balance sheet is very important. The pandemic, and I should say the 2020 oil crisis, left the IDC balance sheet seriously damaged. Honorable members will recall that there was this strange period in, it was about February, March 2020, when the oil price dropped very, very significantly, and we had a massive drop in shortly thereafter in industrial output across the world because of the pandemic, and these two factors damaged the IDC balance sheet. If we look at the IDC mini group, the balance sheet went to went down quite significantly. By 2020, the balance sheet had been had gone down to 97 billion rand, and I met with the IDC board in 2020, and we started the process of working on how to rebuild the IDC balance sheet. That meant that we needed to change some of the APP for the IDC. It's called the corporate plan, to enable it to have a little bit of relief. We lowered some of its targets to give it the space to be able to recover. And in this financial year, the recovery got to 158 billion rand, and that allows the IDC now to be able to do more. If we include companies that are incorporated because they are all wholly owned subsidiaries of the IDC, or we look at companies whose financial statements are incorporated in the IDC because of the level of shareholding, the asset base is even higher. Now, what this asset base does, it allows us to get money on the capital markets at a lower interest rate, because the risk profile of the IDC goes down. And that then helps the IDC to bring down the cost that it charges its clients. We also report on the July 2021 unrest response by the IDC, 2 billion rand allocated, just short of 2,000 firms supported, 1.5 billion rand dispersed, and the number of workers covered by all of the firms that the IDC supported and that its intermediary supported is about 26,000 workers. So this points then to the kind of way in which we bring the three elements together. Build a strong balance sheet for the IDC, ensure that we can deal with approvals in its core business, which is driving industrialization, but also take into account when you have a unexpected challenge like the July 2021 unrest, that we have to be able to rely on our institutions to jump in and assist. And this slide points to those three elements of the work of the IDC. The next slide will then highlight the work by two other entities, the NEF, 1.3 billion rand in approvals. This is the highest level of approvals and disbursements in its 19-year operational history. 800 million rand of the money was target. It exceeded that target, and it was able to exceed that target because we were able to secure money from off-balance sheet sources. The NAF basically went out in the market and said, we can render service to smaller businesses and empowered firms better than is normally done in the market, and it was able to attract funding. It disbursed just over R1 billion, and this data include its core work as well as the unrest funding. And then finally, the ECIC, which provides risk cover for companies that are in the export market, they approved transactions worth $250 million in this period. The next slide then highlights the work of the department itself, not the entities, but just the DTIC specifically. And the DTIC approved funding of R6 billion in the financial year. This is 196 projects that the department had had approved, R39 billion in projected total investment value. So this is when it uses all of the instruments at its disposal and the commitments that counterparties in an investment transaction make, footprint of it is R39 billion. And all of the companies that were supported employed just over 66,000 workers. The next slide then provides information on master plans. And we've provided the committee with detailed reports on the master plans, and there's a little bit more information in the annual report itself. So this is just a few highlights. This is not an attempt to replicate an entire presentation, but in the steel master plan, a number of projects in the value chain leveraged R1.3 billion in new investment and supported just over 2,000 jobs. On global business services in this financial year, the master plan was finalized in a sector that has the potential to create thousands of jobs in the next decade. To give an example, just last year, 130 jobs were created in Cape Town in a global call center called Boulder, and 90% of that will be available to youth employees. And this is all based on the incentives provided by the DTIC. And then complementing that kind of things, the digital service infrastructure was reinforced by the announcement of R8.5 billion of investment in data centers, telecommunications, and software development. And there are tens of thousands of workers currently employed in the sector as a result of the DTIC incentive schemes. The next slide then goes into a little bit more detail on different master plans. It then takes the sugar master plan. The sugar industry was supported to drive transformation and growth. R225 million was spent on small-scale, largely black farmers, and a R60 million premium fund was committed by the South African Sugar Association and supported just over 12,800 small-scale growers starting from the 2021 season. Now, this money was largely generated from the sugar industry itself through the various measures that the department has put in place. So we were not drawing this money from the fiscus. It's not on the budget that Parliament votes on, but it is an important part of the support that we're unlocking for small-scale farmers. So when I talked about using off-balance sheet financing, this is an example of trying to get more done without having to necessarily dip always into the national budget that the Minister of Finance puts forward every year. To drive localization, there was an increase, 22% increase in the procurement of local sugar by soft drink producers. And just to show the connection between these various things, it helped Illova small-scale cane development project that I'm advised employs 860 people in KZN. And ShopRite also partnered with local growers and government to promote the sale of locally produced sugar in its stores all over the country. The next slide continues with the master plan highlights. It looks at poultry, R22.5 million. That's the weekly local chicken slaughter capacity that has been developed as a result of increased investment. The South African poultry industry pledged to invest R1.5 billion by the end of 2022. And by November 2021, they had reported an investment total of 1.1 billion rand. This had created 9.8% additional capacity for emerging farmers. And as I've indicated, it's also helped with slaughter capacity. From the work that has been done on a fund that has been set up jointly by the IDC and Delrad to support new and current expansion across the agriculture value chain, 6 poultry projects valued at, call it about 360 million rand, were approved, and they created 204 additional jobs. We also had extra production of soya and maize, which will be available for feed and export. And this is 9% up from the previous season. And the industry reported that more than 2,000 jobs were created across the value chain. The next slide goes into the clothing, textile and footwear master plan. Some highlights there around investment by a company in non-woven textiles in the Western Cape, a company in knitting and dyeing in KZN, and a company in safety, footwear and PPE in Gauteng. There was also work on value chain localization. We give the example of the Fushini Group that has now sourced 35% of its clothing locally. We'd like them to increase that further. So if they are listening, I'm sure they'll be working hard on that. Mr. Price also sources 35% of total merchandise locally. And Game looked at a new clothing line, also with a component that is locally manufactured. And as was reported to the portfolio committee, quite a lot of work was done to help firms that were damaged in the July 2021 unrest, particularly small businesses. We worked with retailers to reestablish supply chains, and a number of jobs were covered by these. Honorable members will see 49 firms in the CTFL industry, that's the clothing, textile, footwear and leather industry, had damage as a result of that unrest, and the department and entities work closely to try to reestablish and support those businesses. The next slide goes into further master plan highlights. It looks at the furniture master plan concluded in this period, and it highlights one of the big investments that was unlocked through a partnership between the department and PG Bison, with 2.5 billion rand investment in new manufacturing capacity. And particularly important here was this medium density fiber board plant that will have the capacity to replace close to a billion rand's worth of imports every year. On the right hand side, it introduces the auto master plan. And this financial year was the first operating year of the, just go back one slide, of the fund that has been set up to support transformation in the auto sector. 178 million rand was approved, and there were various commitments made by the large auto assemblers for 10 enterprises on what can be bought from them, what support they can get over the number of years, and some of it was realized already in 2021. The next slide then breaks down the auto master plan for one firm, and we take the example of the new C-Class Mercedes-Benz that was produced in South Africa. There's only 3 places globally that the new C-Class Mercedes-Benz is produced. It's Bremen in Germany, it's Beijing in China, and it's Buffalo City in South Africa. This was a very large investment. Company reported 13 billion rand with about 600 new jobs, direct jobs, and 2,000 jobs in the value chain. There's a number of black-owned suppliers, and one of them, VM Automotive, formed part of the suppliers program that the company has, and they've introduced what they call laser blanking as a new technology in this new Generation C class. We then, in the next slide, go to another vehicle manufacturer, which is Toyota. They invested 2.6 billion rand in building a hybrid car in South Africa, and 2,600 jobs were sustained, a number of new jobs created, just over 300, and there's a large number of parts that are localized, that are produced here in South Africa, more than 600 localized parts, and there are 56 local parts suppliers operating in South Africa, and 16 of them are black owned. And on the right-hand side, honorable members will recall that Toyota launched the Corolla Cross in its plant in eThekwini in October last year, with the value of the investment being set out. The next slide then goes into another part of the auto value chain. And this is now special economic zones. And here we highlight the work of the Swane Automotive SEZ. And three new factories were opened in the Swane SEZ in the financial year, 600 production workers employed, and there's a number of additional firms who are building the facilities in the SEZ, and some of the details are set out there. And we'll be reporting again on this in the current financial year as more of those factories get to be ready for production. And it really is creating quite a significant auto hub, where you have the Ford Motor Company just outside the SEZ, and then some of its suppliers inside the SEZ. The next slide. This now looks beyond master plans, and we look at matters involving local capacity, trade, and so on. And we've had rapid growth in exports of high-tech products like pharmaceuticals and trucks, with export of trucks crossing the $4 billion US dollar threshold for the first calendar year on record. We took the 12-month period ending December. Aspen Pharmacare, which is a South African company with global operations, they exceeded their own target for vaccine production. And the first, and Africa's first anesthetic plant was opened in Tegbega, enabling local hospitals and patients across the world to be serviced by proudly South African-made products. As I reported previously, Afrexim Bank also hosted the Africa Trade and Investment Fair. It's called the Intra-Africa Trade Fair. It was held in Durban, and Afrexim Bank reported that $4 billion worth of trade and investment deals were concluded by a number of different African countries with their banks, with suppliers and others. And the department, of course, did quite a bit of work to help with the trade fair. The department contributed to finalizing rules of origin for products under the African Continental Free Trade Area. An agreement was reached on the rules of origin for about 88% of products on the tariff books, with more than 4,500 products, and we met the target set in the previous year, and the team of Xavier Karim and Nikki Cray and others had to do quite a lot of work, because each of these tariff items lines are themselves capable of extensive discussion to see what should be the appropriate rule of origin. The next slide then goes into the details that we've provided in the annual report, and it covers the equity equivalent investment program. This is a special program that's available to multinational corporations who can't have equity by black South Africans in their firms. And JP Morgan, which is a large global investment bank, entered into such an agreement with the department that helped to unlock 340 million rand fund and it was launched in the financial year that we're looking at. It supports black-owned enterprises and small businesses in a range of areas, in industrial and green sectors, in education, health, and digital inclusion, and in the financial services sector. They've already begun to achieve some outcomes. They've got a short-term window that's done 39 deals with 37 million rand paid out, 32 permanent jobs created, and we then do a breakdown of where that is. They also have a medium to long-term window. 7 transactions worth 60 million rand are in the pipeline. They're going through the due diligence stage in this financial year that we're talking about, some of the details, 4 of them have been covered and are reported on. Can we go to the next slide? We're one slide behind. There we are. And 4 of these projects. Okay. So if we can just go one back. Four of these are in construction, in manufacturing, 2 are in financial sector, and 1 is in retail. 5 million rand has already been paid out. So this has moved quite quickly if we take into account that the fund was only launched in August, and we'll see there also reference to a black-owned company in Katlehong that is expected to create 23 new jobs. Let's move then to the next slide. The next slide provides additional information on the competition area, because together with transformation of the economy has to go to dealing with some of the structural challenges we face. And one of the highlights I want to point to is the Competition Commission published a report in late November, early December last year. It's a report on measuring concentration and participation in the South African economy. And it's one of the most significant public documents released in the past 12 months. The report is what I could describe a who's who. Who owns the South African economy? Who owns the firm that produce what you eat, where you shop, where you go for your medicines, your blood tests, your x-rays, what you read, what you drink, or smoke, where you gamble, where you what you drive, who you fly with, the pipes for the water we use, the renewable energy, the coal, your insurance, your retirement fund, your medical aid, and who you bank with. The study looked at 144 subsectors of the economy, and over 2/3 were found to be highly concentrated, 21% were moderately concentrated, and less than 10% at unconcentrated markets. And we provide a little bit more details there. And what the report concluded is that the provisions that Parliament has enacted in the changes to the competition laws were very, very timely, because they will help to address the challenges that this board, has identified. The next slide provides information on the persistence of level of concentration, and here you, honorable members, will see the different quadrants, and we've highlighted in particular the instances where you have a highly concentrated market with a dominant firm and a highly concentrated market, but with no presumptively dominant firm. The next slide. This highlights other competition work. In cartels, 14 cases were investigated and referred for prosecution. Now, the commission had looked at more cases than the 14, but these were ones where they found in their view that there were grounds for prosecution. So these were very, very careful work that the commission has done. They include firms involved in areas like tourism, defense equipment, vehicle finance, telecom equipment, and earth-moving machinery. And addressing cartels is central to efforts to ensure that we have competition in a market that parties don't collude. And each of these investigations take an enormous amount of time and effort and expertise, because there are lawyers that will be carefully picking through these when we get to the stage of prosecution. Three cases on abuse of dominance were completed in this period. One dealt with Facebook, WhatsApp, another one on cancer drugs, and a third one on school uniforms. And these investigations address the abuse of market power with firms where some of the firms have significant market share in a sector or in a product line. We give one example, which is on the next slide. And that example is on cancer drugs. It involved one firm, and the Competition Commission, that's the CC, conducted an investigation for alleged excessive pricing relating to the sale and supply of a particular cancer drug, which is a first-line treatment, a life-saving drug which stops the development of an aggressive type of breast cancer. And it helps to stop the development of the tumor cells to prevent the cancer from spreading. The commission's investigation revealed that approximately 50% of the total number of newly infected patients were unable to receive treatment due to excessive pricing charged for the medicine. So the impact of excessive pricing affects women, particularly poor women who can't afford to access essential treatment. Sometimes even women who belong to a medical scheme will find that the limits on cover discourages the use of life-saving medication. And the commission's finding said that not only was there prohibited conduct under the Competition Act, but in the view of the commission, it also infringed on several constitutional rights of South African citizens, and the matter has now been referred to the Competition Tribunal. The next slide highlights the work that has been done on mergers. There were about 53 mergers that the department looked at from a much wider pool of mergers, and we'll provide the information in the presentation. But six of these were seen to be particularly significant public interest outcomes. And just looking at a few of these, four of these, three plus Air Liquide, Consul, among others, there was a commitment to significant increased investment that can expand South Africa's capability to produce glass bottles, and it will result in significant import replacement, and it's helped to create close to 300 jobs in just one of the two projects that Consul has committed to. Burger King, the agreement included protection for existing workers and commitments to open new stores and create some 1,200 new jobs. Imperial Logistics committed to capital spending in South Africa over a four-year period, employment commitments they made, and procurement from SMMEs, women-owned businesses, and so on. Air Liquide gave a number of localization commitments, particularly also to work with government on green industry opportunities and on jobs. In these and other projects, we focus on worker ownership provisions, and these were negotiated in some of the significant mergers. And just to look at some of it, the next slide provides two kinds of case studies. On the left-hand side is worker ownership. And this new focus on inclusive growth saw work undertaken that resulted in settlement agreements with Burger King and Imperial Logistics covering about 30,000 workers who will secure shares in the firms that they work for. And we did quite a bit of work in this financial year that we're looking at now on an agreement with ShopRite. It was signed a month after the reporting period, quite significant. We'll come back to it. It's going through the final stages of the competition process. As I've indicated in the budget speech earlier this year, the number of workers with shares in the companies that they own is now becoming fairly significant. On the right-hand side, we give a different kind of example. This is an example of promoting efforts and empowerment beyond our traditional industrial sectors. So there's a company called Global Credit Rating, and they were acquired by Moody's, Moody's the credit rating agency. And as part of the engagements that Moody had with both the department and the competition authorities, they agreed that 20% of equity would be held by Black South Africans. And this was held now by an organization of African women chartered accountants who have their own investment holding company. And it gives female chartered accountants a stake in quite a significant company in the financial sector. All of this was negotiated and finalized during the financial year, but the signing ceremony itself was on the 1st of April, which is the start of the new financial year. The next slide then goes into the examples of trade policy. And trade instruments can be used to support domestic industries by leveling the playing fields with imports and by increasing the competitiveness of firms. So there are different tools in the toolbox. Some of them are tariff adjustments where our rates are lower than that we bound ourselves to in the World Trade Organization. And we've got policy space to increase it up to the level that we're committed at the World Trade Organization. And countries do this regularly. And so we implemented five tariff adjustments. These tariff adjustments were in products like tin plate cans, pails and aerosol cans, steel tubes and pipes, chrome grinding balls, foot-operated grease guns, and safety headgear. But then we also have something called the duty rebate. The duty rebate is where you bring the tariffs down, and you bring it down particularly where you want to lower the cost of an input, where there's a lot of opportunity to expand your downstream sector, and you don't have a significant industrial interest upstream. So we reduce duties through a duty rebate on warp knit fabric for upholstered furniture and for caustic soda that are used in certain kinds of paper. We also implemented a number of trade remedies, one anti-dumping duty on pasta, two safeguard duties on bolt and set screws. There were also sunset reviews of anti-dumping duties. This is where the period of the anti-dumping duty comes to an end, and the authorities, the trade authorities, look at whether to extend it based on the information at their disposal. And some of these were put in place on wheelbarrows, on stainless steel things, on garlic, and on frozen bone-in chicken. Three provisional anti-dumping duties were also put in place on laminated safety glass, on clear float glass, and on frozen bone-in chickens. We've worked with companies to say, look, long-term, trying to only rely on tariff protection is not a good strategy. We've got to increase the competitiveness of South African businesses. And one of the drivers of competitiveness is investment. When a company gets a tariff increase and it relaxes, it's not modernizing its operations, it's not investing in new equipment and machinery, then it becomes even less competitive. So for us, the sweet spot is to try to get both of those done simultaneously. So we've had commitments to increase investment by a number of firms through the measures that ITAC has recommended. And ITAC has reported that more than 25,000 workers were covered by firms who have directly benefited from the trade measures. They believe the figure could even be higher, but they've put that number forward as the minimum support for the trade measures that were granted. So this again illustrates the service delivery impact of our work. So while a trade measure, we measure, has there been a tariff increase? Has there been a anti-dumping duty? Has there been a reduction in tariffs on inputs through a rebate? But seeing what the impact is has not been what the department traditionally did. And in the 2021-22 financial year, I have requested that more of that come out, but it's a particular focus on this new financial year that we're in. Slide 27 covers beneficiation, some of the work done on minerals by the IDC projects that will help to promote mineral development in high-tech batteries, and some of the examples are given there. Work that on the furniture industry that can use more South African trees, and work in the clothing industry that can support local cotton farmers. The next slide will provide the committee with information on a few highlights across the portfolio. We've tried not to cover all of them, just to give us a little flavor. So for example, the CIPC that's reported that 469,983, I think I can call it 470,000 new companies were registered with the CIPC within a day. And that, of course, requires that the CIPC, one of our entities, has a proper system technology platform in place that just eases the doing business in South Africa. Then 28,600 debt rearrangement matters were finalized by one of our entities, the NCT, that assisted highly indebted consumers. 414 technical standards were published by SABS, and about a third of those were technical standards that were developed here in South Africa. The other two-thirds were global standards that SABS worked through and then published. And then seven is the number of years since the NRCS last had an unqualified audit report. And as the Auditor General reported earlier, this year the NRCS achieved an unqualified audit report. The next slide then provides the committee with some information on action against corruption. During the past year, steps were taken to clean up the National Lotteries Commission, which had been under a cloud of corruption, nepotism, and secrecy for a period stretching back over a number of years. We provided a detailed report to the Portfolio Committee on the work that had been done here. So just a few highlights that I can point to: that the board was replaced by a team of South Africans with strong governance records, that we wrote to the Auditor General's office last year to bring to the Auditor General's attention a number of concerns that had arisen from the forensics, that the SIU provided its first reports in the financial year, that disciplinary steps were initiated against implicated board members. And it's in this financial year also that the Gauteng High Court affirmed the right of the executive authority to initiate a forensic investigation, which in turn contributed to the work of the SIU that was set up to probe maladministration in the NLC. If we go to the next slide, it just highlights some of the work on economic recovery that we have reported on, the work of the DTIC, the IDC, and the NEF, 3 billion rands worth of approvals were finalized in this period. Over 2,000 firms were supported in one or other way, and more than 38,000 jobs were covered by the support program. So these were the number of people employed by companies that received some support from the DTIC group. The next slide really just seeks to introduce the economic context of our work. the global economic outlook. The global economy is projected to grow by 3.2% this year and 2.9% in 2023. This is a downward revision. So the IMF has brought down its projection of growth given some of the risks. We'll be looking now for the latest data that will be available shortly on the projections. But some of the risks are highlighted in those three bullets on that slide. The war in Ukraine that has disrupted grain and energy markets. The economic costs of the war are expected to spread further through commodity markets, through trade, and through financial interlinkages. We're seeing now global monetary policy tightening due to rising inflation across both developing and developed economies. Fuel and food price rises. We've seen that, which already having a global impact and are expected to continue to have a negative economic impact on vulnerable populations, particularly in low-income countries, but also low-income consumers in middle-income and high-income countries. We're seeing lingering COVID-19 effects in China and the rising monkeypox infections. The next slide then provides a little bit more information on the economic overview. It makes the point that the South African economy began to recover from the first wave of COVID-19. It grew 2.7% during the reporting period, and our GDP was valued just over 6 trillion rand in 2021 prices. Manufacturing exports were the highest in at least a decade. The agriculture and parts of the auto value chains had their best export performance yet. Africa opened its first anesthetic production facility in the same year that we saw pharmaceutical exports reach record levels, and they crossed the $1 billion threshold. Some of this were linked to the COVID-19 products that we had spent quite a bit of work in 2020 supporting and promoting. The next slide. The slide makes the point that despite progress, the economy and ordinary South Africans still face many and great challenges. Some of them are persistent challenges and some are new challenges. Unemployment, open unemployment, meaning people looking for work, stood at 7.8 million persons, and we had an additional 3.7 million discouraged work seekers. The growth rate, the economic growth rate, yes, it's affected by energy and logistics challenges, but it is below the levels required to boost broader development in a sustainable way. The past 2 years have also highlighted the risks that the economy face that require the department to develop a better way of de-risking the economy so we protect the livelihoods of all South Africans to build forward better. The next slide provides more information. It gives some information on the domestic economic context. In the financial year under review, the team has extracted the information to show that growth was driven by 6 sectors, particularly high growth in transport and personal services. Manufacturing grew by 1.1% and generated 744 billion rand in value add. And that growth was weighed down by declines in construction and agriculture in this period. Then manufacturing exports amounted to about 520 billion rand for the financial year, accounting for 27% of our export basket. And growth forecast for the current calendar year is 1.9% and for next year 1.4%. Of course, these will keep on being revised on the basis of new information. Challenges since the start of the reporting period, 3 new shocks or headwinds that impacted on the economy. First, the July 2021 unrest in KZN in parts of Gauteng that led to loss of life and the destruction of infrastructure, dented business confidence, and yes, it disrupted supply chains. The second one was the war in Ukraine that resulted in fuel price increases and rising costs of fertilizers, wheat, edible oils, and other foodstuffs. Now, those two were in the financial year. We've, just for the completeness of reporting, we point out the floods on our eastern seaboard in April. At the end of the reporting period, led to loss of life and washed away homes, shops, factory assets, and railway lines. And it does remind us on the cost of climate change. The next slide. Some lessons. Three standout lessons from the new shocks, which reinforce what we've learned from the systemic challenge of climate change and the COVID-19 pandemic. So we've gone through a period of extraordinary external crisis, and we're trying to learn some lessons from it. The first lesson is that economies and supply chains are vulnerable, and that building greater industrial resilience need even greater prominence in our policymakers. So while policymakers across the world have looked in the past only at the growth rate, more and more they are looking at how to build an economy that is more resilient, that can absorb these punches, these challenges, without causing very, very significant harm in a society. The second lesson is that societies need a capable state, a state that's responsive and agile, must be able to move quickly and equipped to marshal what is needed when a risk materializes. Because we work on the medium-term strategic framework and annual performance plans, very often the government system is designed on a very thorough process of planning, getting everybody on the same page, allocating budgets, then beginning slowly to roll out services, and these typically get planned way in advance of a financial year. But what do we do in a world where things are moving much faster? Our systems really are not designed for that. And so part of what we need to do is, while we recognize the need to work within the ambit of the Public Finance Management Act and all the staffing and other regulations that we have in place and all the regulatory requirements, the truth is that in a fast-changing world, we need more agility. And that's really a very important lesson that we've learned from this period. The third lesson is that the absence of economic justice place the burden of climate change, of social disruption, and of geopolitical tensions and disruptions on those in society that can least afford to shoulder those burdens. And therefore, a big part of our job, much as we're seeking to deal with the technical economic challenge, we also need to promote a broader economic justice agenda and ensure that there's fairness in the economy, that there's transformation, that there's an opportunity for small business, that more South Africans are in sustainable work. Those are all quite critical. So these were some of the lessons. Honorable members, the next part of the report, which will start on the next slide, is the annual performance summary, looking specifically now at the annual report that was tabled and the work of the DTIC and its 10 programs or branches, as they are sometimes called. And Chair, with your permission, I'm going to ask if the Director General can take the Portfolio Committee through it. The DG can move with a little bit of speed, given that the document has all the detail in it and has been circulated, the annual report itself, to members of the committee. But this presentation does help to summarize and show the overall trends. So I'm going to ask Shabir Khan, through you, Chairperson, to take the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Khan.
Thank you, Minister. Greetings, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, officials from the Auditor General, colleagues from the DGIC. Chair, the first slide on Part B really sets out or provides a snapshot of the performance over or since the start of the administration. As members of the committee would know, the first year was a year in which both the DTI and EDD had separate annual reports, and the right-hand side of the slide really sets out the performance in that first year. In the 2020-2021 financial year, that was the first year in which both the former departments were consolidated, and of the 35 indicators and targets in that year, 33 were achieved and 2 were not achieved. In the current reporting period, we do have 73 targets, and of the 73 targets, 66 were achieved and 7 were not achieved. The next slide really sets out the, or provides a high-level summary of the 10 program and the KPIs across the 10 programs together with the targets and the achievement across the entire department. The next slide sets out the 7 targets that were not achieved. I'll start with the first one, which was an internal capacity building target, which was not achieved primarily due to change in business requirements within the department. The review of the governance framework has been shifted to the following financial year. Of the 2 master plans that were targeted in the last financial year, the global business services was finalized and launched, whilst consultations on a further master plan was still underway. With regard to the product designations on building materials, the minister requested public consultation before publication, and this was not completed at the end of that reporting period. Under Program 6, which is the industrial financing branch, there was an action report detailing partnerships with private sector entities, and these activities were not signed off within the reporting period. With regard to a specific target of statistical reports on companies' registrations from CIPC, one of the reports did not contain the required information on companies' registration within one day. And lastly, a report on active pharmaceutical ingredients, that study, which was due in Q4, was not produced due to non-compliance issues identified as part of the supply chain process. Next slide. Chair, this one is really starting on program one. Very quickly, all eligible creditor payments were processed within 30 days. The target on people and persons with disabilities was met at the end of 31st March 2022. 54% of women in SMS positions were employed at the end of the reporting period, which was well above the annual target of 50%. 54 interns were appointed against a target of 54. And the last 2 bullets really captures the work that we've done under the shared services. The first one was in the ICT space, in which we provided continued best practice frameworks across the portfolio. And the second one is really the strengthening the forensic arm of the department to really capacitate and provide forensic capabilities to the rest of the portfolio. The next one is, next slide, captures the work in Program 2, which is largely the trade work, starting with the South Africa's chairship of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area Institutions, as well as SACU. And here, the committees on investment, competition policy, digital trade, as well as women and youth in trade were established. We started negotiation on the AFTFTA rules on the protocol on intellectual property, investment and competition policy. The dispute settlement body and appellate body was established. And we've also agreed on rules of origin, which determine African content in our trade on 87.7% of all products. The SACU tariff offer to the Africa Continental Free Trade Area Agreement improved to 7,045 tariff lines. We've also established committees on industrialization, export promotion, and investment promotion to try to consolidate value chains and investment in SACO, and establish SACO as a base for global exports. And the South African chairship of the AFCFTA institution extended to July 2022. And South Africa also concluded its term as chair of SACO. The next slide captures the work that we're doing in multilateral fora. The first one starts around the work that we did in March 2022, in which South Africa's participation and interventions at the first G20 Trade Industrialization and Investment Working Group under the Indonesian presidency. Similarly, we also led South Africa's participation and interventions at the first BRICS contact group on economics and trade issues meeting, which was under the Chinese presidency. As previously reported at the WTO, we focused on advancing an outcome on the TRIPS waiver, which ensured that the IP rights do not unduly hinder access to medicines and medical technologies, thus enabling diversification of global pharmaceutical supply chains. There was also a lot of technical work done on the various proposed outcomes for the WTO ministerial, which was postponed from December 2021 to June 2022. And we also led South Africa's delegation and provided substantive inputs in submissions made on behalf of SACO at the arbitration hearing between SACO and the EU in regard to safeguard measures taken on EU poultry imports under the SADC-EU Economic Partnership Agreement. We're also delighted to report that rooibos was added to the EU Register of Products with protected designation of origin, becoming the first product in Africa to receive the status and the 40th non-EU product. And the first draft of the Trademarks Amendment Bills was submitted to the Chief State Law Advisor for pre-certification. The next slide captures the work done within the USA market during the AGOA ministerial, which was held in October last year. The African ministers of trade, with concurrence of the United States administration, agreed that South Africa will host the next AGOA forum in 2023. South Africa, with its African partners, will seek to encourage the US to extend AGOA beyond its 2025 expiry date, which will also seek to improve conditions of access and ensure that benefits of AGOA continue. Sub-Saharan African countries also call for U.S. support to Africa's industrialization and integration efforts, including the AFCFTA, and encourage increased U.S. investment in manufacturing and infrastructure across the continent. In the Chinese market, the establishment of a quick response team was put in place, which sought to deal quite speedily with resolutions to bilateral trade concerns such as customs clearance, illegal imports, and the suspension of certain products in the Chinese market due to COVID-19 restrictions. Following 1 year of South Africa's inability to sell oysters to China, South African oysters are now allowed to enter the Chinese market in August 2021. The next slide moves into the next program, which is the spatial industrial development. This slide provides a snapshot overview or a geographical overview of the 10 designated SEZs. And to date, we have 170 operational investments in the 10 designated SEZs, as well as investments to the value of 20.9 billion, as well as 19,300 jobs that we created. Quickly moving to some of the investments in the different areas. The next slide starts off with the Richards Bay Industrial Development Zone. Here we've seen the construction of a technical service center in Nyanza Light Metals for the titanium dioxide plant, which is valued at 130 million rand. Furthermore, we saw within the Wilma processing plant in the IDZ, an important 385 construction jobs have been created, on the construction of the 1.1 billion rand edible oil plant. We also sold on the Lovemore Bros facility, which has been certified as a bonded facility by SARS. And this expansion has led to Lovemore Bros spending an additional 9 million rand on equipment for the new bonded warehouse. And lastly, ProStar Paints, a manufacturer of paints, decorative, protective and industrial coating, is also expected to start construction in the new financial year following the approval of the 54 million rand top structure. And this project is valued at 141 million rand. The next slide sets out the work at the Dubai Trade Port Special Economic Zone. We've seen here a 161 million rand private sector investment that has been leveraged during the year. We've also seen two lease agreements which have been signed by Synergy Blenders as well as Alum Diapers. We've also seen some work around Trade Zone 2 where bulk infrastructure valued at an estimated value of 106 million rand, which has been completed. Within the Saldanha Bay Industrial Development Zone, we saw three investment pledges which were made at the 40 SA Investment Conference. They are Cape Oceans Terminals, Ankara, and a new investment called Africa Ports, which is a solar energy manufacturing plant for the South African and African markets. The next slide is the work done at the Shwane Special Economic Zone. I think the minister captured this in his earlier slides, so I wouldn't go into any detail on that one. But on the East London Industrial Development Zone, we've seen new facilities being completed for Mercedes-Benz, Oria, Evo, Polytech, Valeo, Draga, and all these are in the automotive space, as well as Bushveld, which is in the renewable energy space. The next slide. The next slide sets out the work that we've done in the industrial parks area. Here we've seen a number of security upgrades and building refurbishments on four industrial parks being Dumbaza, Komani, Wachabelo, and Wulindlela. We've also seen some construction and refurbishment on four industrial parks. Similarly, we saw some phase two factory refurbishments of Sesego, the Sesego Industrial Park, which was initiated, as well as phase one of security and bulk infrastructure for the Upington Industrial Park. We've also seen applications submitted to the fund for phase two factory refurbishments for three industrial parks and phase one security upgrades for two industrial parks. We've also seen some work at the Botsobelo Digital Hub, which has been constructed and is operational. And we've seen this has been attended to over 2,000 youth, including 130 youth receiving ICT-related training. We've also seen a 2 billion rand total investment increase over a 12-month period, which we've seen investments increase from 4 billion rand to 6 billion rand over this reporting period. The next slide further emphasizes this point. Here we can see the industrial parks across the seven provinces, and these total 13 industrial parks. Within these 13 industrial parks, there's 1,141 tenants, over 48,000 people employed across these 13 industrial parks, and total investments of 6 billion rand across these industrial parks. The next slide. The next slide moves into program four, which is our sector branch that deals with the master plans. I think the committee is familiar with the work that we're doing in this area. And literally, the work in this area is central to the social compact between government, industry, and organized labor. The next slide sets out some of the key achievements in the different sectors. Starting with the furniture industry, we've seen the FX Group announcing its support towards the expansion of board manufacturing. We've also facilitated access to markets for 10 design or manufacturing companies in the furniture sector. And we also collaborated with Flowery SA, in which a furniture portal was launched to promote furniture localization. Within the sugar industry, reciprocal commitments and agreements were adhered to by all stakeholders. And here, really, we are referring to the commitments by business as well as labor and the government. We've also seen a partnership with ShopRite, in which the SA cane growers, with the SA cane growers on prioritizing the selling of locally produced sugar in its 1,189 stores. And we've also seen a 15% growth in local sales. On the poultry industry, we've seen the South African poultry industry pledging an amount of 1.5 billion rand by the end of 2022. And by the end of November 2021, the poultry industry has already invested 1.14 billion rand and created 9.8% additional capacity for emerging farmers. The industry also has invested in creating 120 tons of additional cooking capacity per week. And the Animal Feed Manufacturers Association has reported an additional 2,000 jobs being created in the extended value chain. The next slide captures the work done in the metal fabrication, capital and rail transport equipment sector. And here we are reporting that the minister, along with industry stakeholders from the steel and metal fabrication sector, signed a master plan, which has been developed in consultation with all stakeholders from industry in June 2021, and implementation is underway. Within the scrap metal intervention, here we are reporting the work done within the reporting period. Here, an export duty on scrap metals was introduced in the period, and through the ITAR Act, price preference system was extended to 31st July 2023. The two instruments implemented concurrently ensures adequate quality of scrap metal is available at competitive pricing for local processing by steel mills, secondary smelters and foundries. And these measures will contribute towards local beneficiation of scrap metals and restore supply chain stability in the industry. In the textiles, clothing, leather and footwear, here we're looking at some of the an investment in Garankua by Bader SA with 800 employees and an investment of 300 million in additional capacity to manufacture automotive leather and split leather. And we've seen another investor, Neptune's Boots, in which they invested in additional production of 2,500 pairs of gumboots a month. The next one is in the plastic sector, in which we've seen a number of investments here. The first one being Cesar Bantu Piping Systems with an investment of 70 million rand. Another investment by Cospac, located in the Western Cape, made an investment of 3 million rand. And we've also seen a further investment of 2 million rand, which was introduced for the trigger spray pump. Another investment by Very Green, located in Pinetown, which was pledged of around 2 million rand. And lastly, Hoop, located in Cape Town, invested 5 million rand to put up tooling using local engineering firm and license production to locally manufacture and to make vaccine thermal cooler boxes. Within the pharmaceutical and medical devices sector, here in response to the inequality of access to COVID-19 vaccines in developing countries, and in particular Africa, Afrigen, the BioVac Institute, the South African Medical Research Council, and a network of local industries were appointed by the World Health Organization in 2021 to establish its first mRNA vaccine technology development and transfer hub. And it is a global initiative to enable sustainability, locally owned mRNA manufacturing capabilities in lower middle income countries, contributing to future pandemic preparedness. The next slide further outlines the work in this sector. Here we are reporting and the big investment by Aspen, which was a 3.4 billion investment that was announced in 2018. And this enabled the conclusion of a contract manufacturing agreement between Aspen and J&J for the production of the first choice COVID vaccine for the continent. And it also enabled the conclusion of a license agreement for the product, Aspenovax, the Aspen COVID-19 vaccine product between Aspen and J&J. To date, Aspen produced 225 million doses of the J&J vaccine over the past 17 months, making it the largest J&J contract manufacturer of the J&J COVID vaccine. And this has created a number of jobs and, of course, absorbed a number of existing jobs. As the bulk of this investment was already contained in the 3.4 billion rand investment, the pivoting towards vaccine contract production required minimal investment by Aspen. Furthermore, new investments to expand vaccine production medium to long term will come into being in the context of the Serum Institute agreement recently signed between Aspen and the Serum Institute. We've also seen Africa's first anesthetic plant was opened in October 2021 to produce propofol product for South Africa and global markets. In the cosmetic sector here, the department facilitated an accreditation program jointly with SABS, where we've seen Johnson Baby South Africa was SABS certified, which means that their sanitary pads and baby diapers products will now carry the SABS approved mark. And this is the first company in Africa to get this certification. In the green industry sector, we've seen some investments in the PV, solar PV manufacturing space, namely two plants for Seraphim and Arc Solar with an investment value of 500 million rand. We've also seen the publication of the green paper on electric vehicles for public comment. In aerospace and defense, 149 highly skilled jobs were created through the Aerospace Industry Support Initiative, and 20 SMMEs directly supported with technology enhancement, as well as standards and accreditation. The next slide sets out the work that we're doing within the consumer and corporate regulation branch. Here is the work done on a number of bills, starting off with the Companies Amendments Bill, which was public for public comment in October 2021. And the review of these public comments was underway by the end of the financial year. The Liquor Amendment Bill is also under review, and during the year there was a large number of interdepartmental engagements on government measures and approach to liquor abuse. And the Lotteries Regulatory Impact Assessment was finalized, and the recommendations will inform proposed legislative changes, as well as the branch reviewed the Special Economic Zones Act and policy to identify issues for possible consideration going forward. The next slide moves on to our industrial financing branch. And within this year, we've seen 4 billion rand dispersed, a drawdown of 784 million rand from the 12i tax incentive program. And this leveraged 22 billion rand in investments by supported companies, and these supported companies have procured 135 billion rand from domestic suppliers. So this is really showing the complete value chain of the impact of the work in this area. We've also seen increased intra-Africa trade to support some of the work done on the continent, and these supported companies have exported 8 billion rand across various African countries. We've also seen a number of investments that were approved, which will result in investments of 28 billion rand. Also a large number of investments in the automotive space with a projected investment of 12 billion rand. and these projected investments will result in approximately 16,000 direct jobs which will be supported. In terms of the spatial footprint of the support, 32 of the 52 municipalities were supported. In terms of our transformation objectives, 79% of beneficiaries which were paid are BEE levels 1 to 4, 75% were black-owned projects, 31% were women-owned projects, as well as 12% were youth-owned projects. We've also seen some integration work between the department, IDC and NEF, in which they are collaborating on a industrial financing web portal. And lastly, we've seen some green energy initiatives initiatives, and these were funded projects to include solar panels, as well as the installation of energy efficient equipment and the storage of rainwater. The next slide really outlines the work in a bit more detail around some of the work on which I've outlined on the previous slide, but importantly to highlight that the critical infrastructure reconstruction program, which was deployed during the July unrest, supported a number of investments and also helped rebuild some of the building that were destroyed during the unrest. We've also seen some improvement in some of the guidelines, which allowed for virtual events. And we've also seen 100% of grant funding for women, youth, and persons with disabilities, which was some of the amendments to the guidelines. The critical infrastructure program also made some improvements, approvals for newly designated industrial parks. And we've also seen the critical infrastructure program, which was implemented during the quarter, resulted in 12 conditional approvals. The changes to the EMEA guidelines also enabled some digital events which supported a large number of companies, more importantly, women, youth, and persons with disabilities. And all of these interventions contributed to growing the country's economy, developing skills, and creating opportunities, thus addressing the challenge of unemployment in the country. The next slide is our export branch. And here we are detailing some of the work which we have done during that period or the reporting period, starting off with some of the work done in Africa. Here, a big part of the work in that financial year was the support of the Intra-Africa Trade Fair, in which we reported that a large number of South African companies were supported, and 262 business meetings were held, and this led to 2,565 trade leads, around 1.4 million rand in export sales generated at the fair, as well as the Intra-Africa Trade Fair as a whole generating $42.1 million in trade and investment deals across the countries. We also report the work done on a number of business forums for Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, and Nigeria, which culminated in a pipeline of $1.6 billion of projects between Ghana and South Africa. We also organized the South Africa-Kenya Business Forum, which saw the signing of an MOU between Kenyan Airways and SAA. We also facilitated a South African company called Flowtight to secure in Zimbabwe the manufacture and supply of glass reinforced pipes to the National Matabeleland Zambezi Water Phase 1 and 2, which is valued at $100 million. The next slide captures the work done around across the world. A year we supported a Kuwaiti-owned company, which is based in Eastern Cape, to overcome some export challenges of sheep and goats to Kuwait. And through this unblocking, we saw 57,000 sheep as well as 170 goats and 800 cattle being exported. We also facilitated engagement with port officials and the Lulu Group from the United Arab Emirates to discuss challenges faced by the company at the Cape Town port when exporting. We've also seen a virtual retail induction session that was held with senior buyers from the Lulu Group in the Cape Town office, focusing on a number of sectors, and 46 African companies profiled their products with Lulu's exploring sourcing possibilities with two companies, and the minister visited Lulu as well. We also facilitated the export of beef for the company QK Meats to China. And QK Meats is a BEE company and one of the largest meat processing plants that needed to be re-audited by Chinese authorities. And through the work between the department and Delrad, the company managed to get re-audited and continue exports into the Chinese market. The next slide continues with the work done. Here we've seen an agreement signed between Nexa and the Korea Atomic Energy Research Institute. We've also seen a matchmaking session between a Swedish buyer and a South African company called Carpedim. We also facilitated the Guinness Funds Group, which is a UK distributor of macadamia, with an annual volume of 126 containers, linking up the Green Farms Nut Company located in Mpumalanga province. We've also concluded an MOU between the DTIC and SIPO, which formed the basis of collaboration between the two parties for future export promotion activities. The next slide sets out the work which we've done at the Dubai Expo. In here, once again, we're highlighting that the Dubai Expo serves as a showcase to the world of the best of South Africa capabilities on offer in terms of trade, investment, tourism, as well as sport and arts and culture. In addition to the physical presence, there was also a number of off-site activities, as well as a webinar, as well as virtual exhibitions and online shopping platforms. And these platforms allowed more than 100 companies to exhibit, with 36 companies added to the existing membership of Proudly SA. The sector's profile included agriculture, agribusiness, clothing and textiles, automotive, and so on. Although the expo was primarily not a trade show, South Africa's participation generated close to 90 business leads, with early examples of actual returns, including an Emirati company called Velocity Ventures announcing a $250 million investment expansion in South Africa to produce steel coils, 6 SMMEs securing $145 million from international investors after they were selected to pitch to investors using the South African platform. 12 South African artists received a 1 million dirham in performance fees from events linked at the expo. And the UAE-based store Hyperama selling South African products increased their monthly turnover by 1 million dirhams. We also seen a South African company, Rooibos company, receiving a number of orders. And also during the event, we've seen a number of orders generated through the online shopping platform. The next slide is the export development work. And here, through the exporter development program, we've seen a number of individuals being trained through the companies that were trained, who attended the export awareness session. 205 individuals went through the Intense Global Exporter Program, as well as 65 individuals recruited from the GEPP graduates who went through the mentorship program. And this was really a strategic partnership between the DTIC and the German Development Agency called GIZ. The next slide moves.
Mr. Khan, I see you have just under 20 slides left, and I think we're going to be running short on time. So if you can just gallop through and just highlight the most important information, because this presentation has been circulated to members. We want to leave enough time for discussion. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'll move quite rapidly along. Chair, Program 8 is our investment branch called Invest SA. And through the work of Invest SA, they developed a 176 billion rand pipeline. They also co-hosted the FOT South African Investment Conference. And we've seen a number of unblocking work that they've done during the course of the work program, which looked at visa facilitation, intercompany transfers, as well as critical skills. The next slide, Chair, sets out some of the details of the work done under this program around the unblocking. So we can move on to the next two or three slides, which really set out the work done in this area. Under Program 9, which is the competition branch, Chair, here we report a number of mergers in which the department participated in terms of Section 12A3 of the Competition Act. And during this financial year, the minister was notified of 290 mergers. Of these, the DTIC participated in 53. The next slide sets out some of the mergers in which the DTIC has participated in with significant public interest outcomes, the first one being Consol, and Minister has already outlined some of these, just to highlight some of the big investments coming through as a result of these mergers. We've seen the 1.5 billion rand investment in the N2 furnace, and a similar investment will be made at the N3 furnace. The next one, slide, captured the work done between the DP World and Imperial Logistics merger, which was finalized in quarter four. And here, the key highlight is a ESOP of 5% of South African workers as a result of the merger, and a 2.1 billion rand CapEx program over the next 4 years. The one on between ECP Africa and the Burger King merger, here we've seen also an ESOP which was created, and we've also seen an investment of 500 million rand to establish 16 new Burger King stores across the country. The next slide is really the work done, and the next slide, Sulu. Under the presidential employment stimulus, this is the work that we've previously reported on, and here this was a work program that was approved during the adjustment budget process last year, and we really got funding through the adjustment budget at that point in time. Monies was transferred into IDC in March 2022. We've seen the first disbursement in the current financial year in June, and currently 44,000 participants are currently enrolled on the system. Program 10 is the research branch, and this slide really sets out the work done within the research program. If we can move to the next slide. This slide further highlights the work done on the import tracker reports, as well as a report on executive pay ratios, and lastly, the quarterly analytical reports that came out of this branch. Chair, I'm going to quickly move on to the Part 3, the financial performance. Next slide. During the financial year, we had a budget of 11.6 billion rand, and of the 11.6 billion rand, 1.9 billion rand went towards the infrastructure programs, namely SEZs and critical infrastructure on the industrial parts program. We've also seen a net asset value in terms of balance sheet of 1.4 billion rand, as well as a contingent liability of 8.7 billion rand. And this is really an accounting of how the incentive commitments that we currently have on book. The next slide sets out some of the key appropriation statement highlights. key to highlight is that we started off with a budget of 9.7 billion rand. There was a special appropriation in which we've seen monies that was appropriated for the July unrest. And lastly, we've seen further funds being appropriated as part of the social employment fund. The next slide. The next slide is literally setting out the budget and the expenditure to date. And literally, we've seen 54% of the budget going towards largely the incentive programs to really boost investment across the various sectors which we do support. The next slide. The next slide is a slide that you will see quite extensively in the annual report as well, which really sets out the financial spending on a program level as well as an economic classification level. And the key thing to highlight is that we had expenditure of 98.3% during the financial year. Very quickly, Chair, I'm going to conclude within the next two slides, literally looking at the audit outcomes. And we've seen already the Auditor General has reported in its earlier report. And here it just sets out the last two financial years, which really gives the committee an indication of some of the changes between the audit outcomes including the DTIC portfolio. The next slide, Chair, really sets out the entities within the group that receive an unqualified outcome with no finding, those who also receive an unqualified with finding, and lastly, the qualification for the National Lotteries Commission. Chair, I will conclude on this slide and then hand over back to the Minister, who will then hand over to yourself. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Minister. Any concluding remarks?
Thank you, Chairperson. Really just to appreciate the opportunity to present report, and may I then hand back to you after thanking also the Acting Director General. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think, members, I think we'll have a comfort break now of, I think, 10 minutes to be reasonable. And then we'll reconvene at about 5 to 12 so that we have a full hour to interrogate to make inputs on the report. So see you again at 5 to 12. And then we'll take hands and comments and responses from the AG's office and from the DTIC team led by the Minister. Thank you.